Welcome to the Pause, Run, Play podcast. We're back with our top 10 of 2023. Actually, it's the morning, so we're drinking our caffeinated beverages. Vince's is green.
If we're not all like half asleep over here, it's like,
no, Vince, why is yours green? What's in it?
It looks healthy.
Is it super greens?
It's a caffeine powder, lemon lime. I don't remember. I should remember the name of the brand because it's our buddy Blake's brand.
Good job, buddy Blake. Actually, hi, Blake. Nice to hear from you.
Shoot.
Wait, I can't remember. Anyhow, nice. Josh, hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm so hyped to be here.
This is your favorite episode of the year.
My favorite episode.
My energy.
Sorry.
But like the caffeine powder king. My energy.
I'm so excited to talk about my favorite movies of the year. I'm so excited to learn what your guys' favorite movies of the year are. And we're doing this pretty soon. We're like, I don't know, like two-thirds of the way through January.
Yeah.
So this is a list that for me always like evolves and changes. We did our top movies of 2022 last year. And then like a week later, I saw After Sun. And After Sun jumped up to number two on my list. So... If you ever want to know if whatever you hear in this episode is the most current version of my list, at least, you can check out. I always post on Letterboxd. I have a list for my favorite movies, and I have kept it private all year while I like kind of make my rankings, and then I make it public after the episode goes live. So really quick, I put out a story on Instagram asking people about their top 10 movies just to see if we had anyone else who wanted to contribute, a friend of the podcast.
Oh, nice.
And Cade responded just with a top three. So I wanted to give a shout out to Cade for responding to the story and share his top three of last year. In no particular order, I think he put Past Lives, The Holdovers, and Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
We've been doing this now for a while. And so we've been doing this since 2020, by the way, I think, because 2019 was our first pretty much full year of podcasting where mm-hmm. we got into it. So 2020 was the first year we did this. So now looking on, essentially, this is our fourth year running. Doing this, how are you feeling about it? Like knowing that this has kind of become a tradition for our little group.
It's fun.
It's definitely super fun.
Yeah. I feel the same way.
I always love talking about it. I always love looking back on the year and reflecting on good movies, which is why I also love the Oscars. That's why like you guys say, oh, you thought that was my favorite episode. I like both of them because we get to do the same thing, right? Look back on the year, see the things that we liked, see the things maybe we should have missed. And then also, I also get good recommendations for ones that I haven't seen from last year. Mm-hmm. You know, one of you guys says, hey, I love this movie. It was my number three movie of the year. And I was like, oh, I hadn't even heard of it. Or, oh, I missed that one. I need to go back and watch it, apparently. So definitely my favorite one.
I feel the same way, actually. Because, you know, like with these, like, I've been really bad the last couple years of watching new release movies. Like, again, wholeheartedly say that. Because I used to, like, Allie and I, our tradition used to be every Sunday to go to the movie theater. We had like seats in Cinemark where we sit like pretty much every single Sunday.
Nice.
And then once we went home in 2020, like that tradition just kind of died for us. And now we just like you could probably go back a couple dozen episodes ago and hear me talk about how stupid it is to have a home theater system and all this. And like how like I don't love that. And now I'm just like, I'm just happy sitting at home watching
homebody.
A movie.
That's what happens when you get a kid.
Well, it's not even that I got a kid, though. It was just kind of like, but like the hassle of like getting up, going to the movie, and like doing all the stuff, like waiting in line with people. And then like, I'm a hot dog eater, guys. I love eating hot dogs at the movie theater. So you get the movie theater, and they have to poke it and make sure that the right temp is in the hot dog every single time. So it's not like you can just go grab a dog and go like a maverick.
This
you have
freaking
to
freaking small town life right
here. No. This is at the Cinemark.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
even
that.
The Megaplex does this. Like because hot dogs are required to be a certain internal temp.
Yeah. So you and get so, salmonella.
Literally, because it's just mystery meat, right?
Do you and still so, have to stand in line at that theater down in your town? Like, no. They don't have an app, do they?
No. Yeah, you buy your tickets.
You have
tickets
to go down there and you have to stand there at the door. And
so you walk up, you get your ticket. They give
just
you
go back in time, like 15 years.
Yeah, it's one. So this is a very classic theater. It's been restored. It's got a lot of stuff in it. And it's a mixed-use theater. So it's not just a movie theater. So it's not like the greatest projector in the world. It's not the greatest.
They were using film still, like, up until recently.
Yeah, so growing up, one of my best friend's dads was the guy who managed the theater. I used to go pick up these real spools, these film spools
those
with him.
Big, huge ones?
Yeah, he would get like two, and they come in like octagonal boxes. Mm-hmm. And we go get them in his truck up in like Spanish Fork, and we drive from our small rural community up to meet this dude at like the McDonald's. And it was like a drug deal for film. And then he'd get the next movie or two for the theater, and then that was what we'd do.
My cousin used to work there too, And so when he was there, I was like, he told me that they're still doing like reels and stuff. I was like, I want to see that. I've never been to the back room of a movie theater. Let me check it out. So he gave me the little tour of that same theater.
Isn't it so cool? You have to really cool. climb up the little stairs and mm-hmm. everything.
Up like the little hidey hole.
Yeah, it's so cool. And like that still all exists in some way. They've just upgraded a little bit. But yeah, no, I want to actually set it up so we can go record an episode of the podcast in the theater.
Be very cool.
Just as a nostalgia piece for me, but two, how cool to be to film in like an old theater. So we're looking for that, trying to like bring that into fruition this year. But yeah, no, I feel the same way though. I get a lot of recommendations. Actually, this year for the Oscars, I want to tell you guys before we get into everything we're talking about, I'm choosing two categories and I'm watching all the films on those because otherwise I get like overly.
Just got to do best Watch pictures. Everything. That's the least you got to do.
Yeah, I'm doing best pictures, best foreign film, and then probably best like short film, I think.
Best animated?
Nice. I should actually do that because the Blue Heron, right? Is that what it is? Or
the Boy in the Heron.
You don't want to talk to Vince about that.
All right, here, sorry. All right, so Josh and I will talk about it really quick.
It sucks, it sucks, it sucks, it sucks. I'm just kidding.
But like, no.
It's really not that bad. Those movies aren't for me.
Like, you don't like Studio Ghibli?
I think they're very pretty, but none of them have really like hooked me. I've tried a few different ones. I haven't completely given up. I've done like Ponyo. I've done Totoro. I've done Spirited Away. All of them
House
are very.
Castle?
Mm-mm.
That's the only other one I'd say.
Princess Mononoke is the one I really want to see. I've heard really good things. Like, I have nothing against these movies, but Boy and the Heron is, from what I've kind of like heard from people that are big fans, it's like the worst one to watch if you're not like a big fan.
Really into it.
Because it's trippy, dude. It's the movie ended and I was just like, I don't know what the point of that story was. I was just lost. Like, so it's fine. It's really beautiful.
So you're saying that's number one on your list, then?
Yeah.
You're giving a spoiler.
I actually have the three worst movies on here, too.
Okay.
No, it's not on there.
Okay, I want to hear, before we get to our top 10,
let's start with our three worst movies of the year.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I could look
up. Just
our
do
least
Vince's.
Favorite movies of the year.
I could do, our least favorite ones that we watched. I'll filter mine so that I can find that. But then after you do yours, I also want to just give a quick rundown of my 11 through 20. I won't even talk about them. I'll just say what they are.
Read through them.
Already just start the controversy. Okay. But if you want to do your worst.
Yeah, I can just do the worst. The reason I wrote it down was because this is a terrible year for superhero movies. Like, usually I have a superhero movie or two. I still do have a superhero movie or two in my top 10, but usually, like, they're pretty high up there, you know? Mm-hmm. This is the worst year for superhero movies. All of them that I have, or most of them that I have on here, where I rated them 2 to 2.5 stars. It's like Shazam 2, The Marvels, Aquaman 2, Ant-Man, The Flash, all of them just I didn't like. And so when I was going through my list of 2023 movies and I saw all of them so low on my list, I was just like confronted with that fact that I've been so let down with superhero movies mm-hmm. lately. For so long. And then my other least favorite movies, Fast X. I'm going to finish the ride when it comes out, but I'm not looking forward to it. And
is Fast X a 2-part film?
Yeah, it's part one, part two, and it ends on the dumbest cliffhanger.
Oh my God.
It's not good. It's not good. I didn't like it anyway.
We could have been a proper country and ended the film at like, what was it, Fast 7, when they like did the parting ways. It's been a long.
Once Paul Walker left, and it just kind of all went downhill.
Paul Walker died, so they put his brothers in as like his stunt doubles. Yeah, I mean,
he was the heart and soul of that franchise, and it's just never been the same since.
And everyone loves to shit on Paul Walker for so much of him, but like the Fast movies,
the guy was amazing.
Were beautiful up until Paul Walker left us.
Mm-hmm. So I expected it to be bad, though, so it's not my least favorite of the year. I knew it wasn't. I thought it was going to be more like fun bad, but it just ended up being bad for me. Mm. My most disappointment, the biggest disappointment that I've had all year long, it was a dull movie. It was boring. It was uninteresting to me. I'm a Zack Snyder fan. I love his superhero movies. Rebel Moon. I was like hyped for it. I was like, it's freaking Zack Snyder. He knows how to like frame an image. He has these awesome slow motion shots. He has an idea for a Star Wars movie. I'll check that out. You know, so that was the whole thing with Rebel Moon is like he wanted to make a Star Wars movie. He pitched it at Lucasfilm. They said no. So he's like, all right, I'll make it myself. And so I'm like, okay, R-rated Star Wars movie done by Zack Snyder. I'll check this out. That sounds pretty interesting. Hype cycle came out. All the commercials came out. looked interesting to me. What a slog. Oh, I was so let down, so man. Sad. It was just like, it just was, yeah, I just was excited for it, and it was dull. That's the best that I can put it for. It was just a dull, uninteresting movie to me. So that got my least favorite of the year, because I was ready to defend it. I was really ready to jump on and be like, don't listen to the haters. This movie's great. It's not. It's not.
Do you think that because it was filmed outside of like the Lucasfilm universe and like kind of like done on its own is part of it? Or is it just literally like, did the plot fall short? Like, I haven't watched it. It's on my list of to watch. So I'm just curious.
There's like, everything is told to you that's happening. It does have some beautiful film like photography like he does. But it's just like, it's like someone told me it was, it's basically A Bug's Life, the story in space, like where it's like the main character lives on this farm and the evil empire shows up. And so she has to leave and recruit some superheroes to come and help her defend the farm kind of a thing. That's that essentially the story.
Life, yeah.
Yeah. But you get zero character development for anybody. And it's just like, it's 3-ish hours long. And it's basically, you get backstory for the main character told to you. As it's kind of showing things, it's just like, but you wonder who I am, let me tell you. And then she just like, so out of the blue, and then none of the characters that she recruits gets any, there's no reason really for them to show up. Once they're recruited, they just stand cool in the background, don't do anything, don't have any additional character development. It's just, why, I don't know why I should care about a single one of these people, and why does the entire, like, all these people feel like this one little farm is the special place to come and take, like defend when the entire universe is falling apart, but no, this one girl's farm has to be saved. I don't know. Sorry to start this on a downer.
That was a set of feelings, Vince.
Yeah. Maybe we'll shorten that up or cut that out so we can like have this podcast a little lighthearted and elevated a little more.
I now want to watch it to be the contrarian of this group, because what if I'm like, I loved it so much.
I can't wait for your 5-star review on Letterboxd.
I'm going to do it out of spite. No, this is like what we deserved from The Office. This was the farm. This was what we deserved. It was what I'm feeling in advance. Like Dwight Schrute's The Farm. Like we deserved it. We didn't get that. It. But like, Josh, what are your 3 lowest films?
The 3 lowest rated films that I had on Letterboxd this last year, and keep in mind,
on that one actually.
Okay, so the first one is Five Nights at Freddy's, okay, which I still had fun with. Like, I still like Josh Hutcherson. It was like, okay, cool. I think my review was literally like, a movie can be fun and absolutely terrible at the same time. Right?
Yeah, and that's the fast movies.
Exactly. Quantumania was down there as well, and then The Mother. Did either of you guys see that one? Mm-mm. It's a Jennifer Lopez Netflix movie. It came out this last year, and I watched it while I was on a date, because this girl was like, yeah, let's watch this movie. Like, I love J-Lo. And I was like, I like J-Lo too. Let's do it. And it was just not great. So those are my 3 lowest rated movies of the year.
Nice.
And then I guess we're starting on a downer. we're starting on a downer a little bit with the lowest movies. We're going to get into our top 10 movies. I'm going to just say my 20 through 11 in order from 20 to 11, and
oh yeah, yeah,
we can let the controversy begin of whether things should be higher or lower on the list.
Be up.
So starting at number 20 and going up. What?
Oh, you're doing 20.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just doing 20 and going up really fast because there were too many movies, because all of the movies that are in my top 10 ended up being 4 stars or above on Letterboxd. It was an amazing year, because last year I think I had, before I watched more movies, I think there were 2, like 3.5 stars that were on there. And this year, I have 6 4-stars that are off of my top 10. And I'm like, yeah. I feel bad. Like, I have to at least mention these because I still liked them. I don't want people to think he's snubbing all these amazing movies. And I think the last 2, like number 11 and number 12, might cause some craziness, like right here. I don't know. So starting at 20, Hunger Games, Ballad of Songbird and Snakes. Joyride, definitely a fun one. Dream Scenario, Asteroid City, mm-hmm. A Good Person with Florence Pugh and Morgan Freeman, Missing, which is like the follow-up to the Searching one, Elemental, The Holdovers, number 13.
Oh, that low.
Number 12, Guardians Volume 3.
I get it.
At number 11.
Might disagree, but I get it.
number 11, and the last one I cut, and it was so hard. Barbie.
Really? Oh, didn't even make it to the top 10.
It's right on the list. And I want you to know that the movie that is my number 10, before people freak out, because I know some people will say this movie made it and Barbie didn't. If you look on Letterboxd, it is the exact same curve between these two movies. So don't come at me. Okay? Like, it's the same thing. I had such a hard time deciding, but this other one I just love more. So
I get it.
All right. Are we ready to get into this? I'm so excited.
I'm way excited. I just want you guys to know I only watched 15 new release movies this year. So my list is probably going to be significantly
pretty much all the movies that you watched are going to be on the list.
Yeah, like pretty much I was like doing my thing last night and I was like, holy cow, I didn't watch any new movies this year. And I was like, which is good. Now I have a lot to look forward to watching during Oscar season and like all this stuff like Killers of the Flower Moon and Rebel Moon and like all these things that like some people hate, some people love. I'm like, cool, I get to see it once things are nominated. I get to look at it from a different perspective or lens and see why was this nominated for Best Picture. Best Razzleberry or whatever because it deserves the worst award. Yeah, I don't know. But anyhow, let's get into it.
Vince, you want to start us off? Kicks off at 10.
With my number 10?
Yeah. Unless you're not ready. Then I can go.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Yes.
My number 10 was The Haunted Mansion.
Never saw it.
I didn't see it either.
So there you have it. It's a Disney film. I liked it because...
it has Danny DeVito and the Keith Stanfield in it.
Pretty much that. Yeah. Like, that was it. I like that part of it. Some of it's, like, kind of fun, but it's definitely a children's movie, right? Like, we watched it because it was spooky season, and we wanted something lighthearted, but also kind of, like, pulling. And it was just fine. It wasn't great. It wasn't excellent. But
my nieces loved it.
Well, and that's the thing. It's, like, every person who I've talked to who is younger than, you know, probably the age of me, 33, who is a child, is like, I loved it!
Okay, your child bro. Over there.
It's a children's movie.
Well, you were just like, anyone who's under the age of me, 33, is a child.
No, or and is a child. I meant to say and is a child. I'm sorry.
I was just like, hey, bro.
You loved it. This is your number one movie, dude. Oh,
yeah. No, you know what I did watch?
You watched it like 46 times.
You know what I did watch this year for the first time was Muppets Haunted Mansion. Because there was all of the hype around the regular one. And I was like, oh, I've never seen this one. And it popped up on Disney during October time of year.
It's Muppets. Right.
Your family, no Muppets Christmas Carol.
Your family are stands for the Muppets, so right? You guys love them. Is that the right word way to use that phrase? Stands? Like you guys love it? Like,
I think so. Don't ask
me. I'm old.
I'm not a child. I don't know the slang, Casey.
But yeah, so for me, The Haunted Mansion was my number 10.
Awesome.
Very nice.
Okay, I'll go next. This is hard for me because I'm the same as you. I had three that were like, I don't know if I should put this on. So can I cheat and put three of them on here? Or do I have to like narrow it down to one?
I'll allow it.
All right. Leo, The Killer, Godzilla minus one. I couldn't decide which to cut. Leo made me laugh so hard, but it's a kid's movie. The Killer is just like, just really, really good slow-paced action movie. Absolutely fantastic. Godzilla minus one is the first Godzilla where I was just like, man, I like Godzilla. You know, like, those are the Godzilla movies are usually those, like, fun, stupid ones for me. But this was just, like, a legit good movie. So, I don't know. If I had to cut one, or if I had to choose one, I'd probably pick The Killer. Just because it's pretty amazing movie. But I really had a fun time with Godzilla and Leo as well.
Very nice.
That's my 10.
My number 10 that just barely pushed out Barbie is Bottoms. One of my favorites.
I tried to watch it before this thing.
You tried to watch it before this podcast.
No, I just wanted to get around to it because that's one that I thought I'd really, really like. So I was like, I'm going to see it before we do our list. And I just never got around to it.
Definitely. If you guys remember, I'm pretty sure last year, I don't remember if my number 10 before I got pushed out was Don't Worry, Darling, or if it was Bottoms.
That sounds like a porno.
this is like throwing me back
to
when I was
in my top five.
This is a bunch of pornos.
So Josh this year got a subscription to Classics of the Flesh, a series for adults.
Divorced earlier this year, Casey. Don't be mad at me. Just kidding.
I'm sorry for laughing so aggressively at that.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Bottoms is definitely worth checking out. I recommend it. It definitely is a little bit of that, like, kind of like the Bodies humor, where it's a lot of, like, newer, like, millennial stuff a lot of times, but people are like, oh yeah, it's like the new age, like female Fight Club and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and it is hilarious, and I love Ayo Edebiri. She's incredible in it, And I love Rachel Sennott as well. They are absolutely hilarious. This movie just, like, is a high school movie, and they just let all of, like, the, you know, classic high school tropes so that they're not too, like... It's weird to say this because they make it so over the top. They let the high school tropes be so over the top that it's crazy, right? Like, the football players are literally always wearing their uniforms and pads all the time, everywhere. Like, the king football player is being toted upon, like, by everyone. Like, everyone's trying to help him. They're sitting at the table in the cafeteria, and it's literally, like, the...
Last Supper?
The painting, like, with the... Or it is, like, the Last Supper, the where creation? They're, like...
Is that what you're talking
I
about?
I think so, yeah. That's, like, behind them, and they're, like, the gods, and then, like...
So, the thing that you called him was the king footballer, like, I just yes. have never heard a better description of high school sports, so thank you.
The starting quarterback for the high school, that's what it is, man. King so, I just... School. I won't say too much, but the movie was great. I loved it. It was absolutely hilarious. Ayo Edebiri and Rachel Sennott, supremacy.
Awesome.
So, that's my number 10. Number 9, you just want to... Kick it back and go this way.
So number 9 for me, I really wanted to throw on one movie in here that I know you guys might roll your eyes at, and I was going to talk about this.
He wants the controversy.
I wanted to throw Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny on here.
Okay.
But I'm sorry.
Cut it.
I cut it. But fair. my number 9 movie, by the way, sorry, I had to go back to that, was the Super Mario Bros.
Nice.
I love that movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. I work with a company at my day job called Groove Entertainment, and it was really fun to see they work with Warner Brothers and stuff like that. They like are owned by Warner Brothers, but like hearing those guys talk about like the unexpected success of that movie was actually what drew me in to be like, because I was like, oh, it's a kid's movie. Jack Black is the voice of, you know, Bowser. And like, sometimes I just can't get into some of these movies that are nostalgic for me in the way that, like, it was my childhood. Like, I played these games, and, like, what I remember of it, I don't want to be tainted. And for me, the movie did great. So I thought it was fun. Not the greatest movie in the world for me, but it was fun, so.
It's fun in its simplicity.
Yes.
Like, it's a kid's movie for sure. Like, it just moves, and there's, like, not a lot of, like, reasons for characters to go along with what's happening. It's just kind of like, hi, I'm Mario, my brother's lost, okay, I'll help you, and then they just like move on, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun because like it's full of references, it's full of nostalgia, you all these things you've seen in video games, they're very very loyally translated into the movies.
They
like
did so good with it, and like I wasn't expecting, right? Chris Pratt is the voice of Mario, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of like hesitant
Chris
about
Pratt's
that
the voice of everything.
And well, Chris Pratt is the new, who was the guy who was the Garfield. Voice of everything? Like just everywhere, he was just all over the place. Yeah. I can't remember, but yeah, I thought it was fun. It just made me like, it literally brought nostalgia back, and I literally like was looking for, I was like, oh, I'm just gonna go get an N64 and play Mario, you know, something like that. Like the classics cool. that I wanted to play.
If you haven't played Mario Odyssey yet, you should check out Mario Odyssey. That's a good one. It's on the Switch. Okay, number 9 for me. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem.
Oh, okay.
One of your most anticipated movies for this year.
Yes, which made it a little bit of a letdown, only because, we've been through this before, but only because this isn't my favorite version of the Turtles. A lot of people love the casting and that they're teenagers and that they act like teenagers and stuff. I found it a little overwhelming, I'll put it that way, to listen to teenagers talk over to each other all the time. But my biggest gripe with it was just they changed the origin stories for all these characters, and they kind of like took out the more Asian influences, you know? Like the way that they learn karate is through like Steven Seagal movies. Like that's how Splinter learned karate, was watching Steven Seagal movies. And I'm like, no, he's from Japan. He's a ninja turned into a rat.
And you won't be telling me otherwise.
Yeah. But other than that, it's a beautiful movie. I've said it before. It's the most beautiful, ugly movie I've ever seen in my life. The characters are drawn to they're drawn as if like a teenager was like scribbling and drawing characters in his notebook. So like the humans look a little bit like ugly and deformed, but the art style is like Spider-Verse, you know, where it's like really unique and pretty. And it's this mix of like 3D and 2D graphics or illustrations. The story is great. The characters are awesome. I love the Turtles no matter what. I'll see them in any iteration with the exception of the live action ones. Those ones are
you mean
the second one,
the Michael
okay.
Bay one.
Yeah, they're tough to get through.
Those are like great movies.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got to move on.
But TMNT is great. Yeah, check out TMNT.
Yeah, so Josh, what is your number nine?
I was going to say, we're about to get into like a real fight here. Number nine was a movie that I watched fairly recently that you guys will probably hear a bit more about as we get to award season, Anatomy of a Fall.
Mm.
A very interesting one. And here's the thing. I usually don't love a lot of courtroom pieces. And I'll say that, and you guys can slap me across the face because I also want to mention how absolutely ticked off I am that Better Call Saul ended up not winning an Emmy.
Not anything.
I think that in a few years, it'll be looked back on as like the craziest, like most insane thing ever. That Better Call Saul, one of the best TV shows ever, got 53 Emmy nominations and zero wins.
Didn't get one.
Anyways, had to slip that in. But there's a lot of courtroom stuff that goes on with this one. Basically, the premise of this movie is, I think we talked about this a little on the last podcast, so I won't spend too long on it. But basically, it's like a mom and her husband and her son, they all live in this house in the middle of the French Alps. And the boy is like partially blind, and he goes out for a walk one day for his dog, and he comes back and he finds his dad dead under like their house. Like they have like a big house, and there's like a place where he could have jumped or fell out a window or stuff like that, and he's fallen and he's dead. Basically, the whole movie takes the route of the police, and there's people who are trying to prove that the mom killed him. And then she's trying to defend herself and say that he was having a hard time and that he jumped out a window himself because of this. And it is very good. It's very thoughtful. It's very interesting and leaves you kind of pondering about taking your own conclusions to what actually ended up happening.
Okay.
So it's a very interesting one, a good one to check out. I don't know if it's available to stream anywhere right now. I rented it for like $4 on Prime, but definitely worth it. I will be interested to see, I don't know exactly all of the rules. I'm pretty sure it was up for and maybe won best international feature at the Golden Globes. It's half in French, half in English.
Love that so much.
So there's a lot of interesting stuff that goes along with it. But it is made, I'm pretty sure it was made in France. So
Is
a good one to check out. Anatomy of a Fall, my number nine.
My number eight film. Are you ready for this?
Yes. Hear it.
Dun, 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 dun. Hunger Games, Songbirds, and Snakes. I use the Snake, S-N-E-K, because it was almost a great movie. And here's why. I really like the book. I never had watched any of the Hunger Game movies or really gotten into them until I started dating your sister, actually.
Oh,
I never read the books. I never done any of it. So it's something that, like, we used to go to the Hunger Games movies every Thanksgiving, right? Like, once I joined your family and stuff like that. And so when this book came out, I listened to it before your sister did. And, like, I loved it, and I was like, oh, this is really exciting. Like, I really like the prequel series and the thought of, like, where did the Hunger Games come from? And then I watched the movie, and it was almost, like, right there. But I think it's a good movie. If you don't know everything about the books or you, like, you know, like, you're just there for a fun time, this movie's great, it's enjoyable, and you can have fun with it. But it wasn't the greatest movie to me, but it was fun.
You ready to fight?
Me? Yeah.
Iron Claw is my number eight.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that maybe, like you said, understandable, so I'm hoping it's not too crazy. When I said that Guardians of the Galaxy was like my number 12, I thought we were going to fight that. So there's got to be some trade-off.
Yeah,
there's
got to be some give and take. Iron Claw's my number eight. We had a whole podcast. Like, check out the podcast. It was really good. We got in-depth with that one.
My number eight, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. This was one that was kind of under the radar a lot of the year for a lot of people, and it took me a while to get around to it, and I watched it and I loved it, and like we said, it was on our buddy Cade's top three of the year. Really, really fun coming of age story. Really interesting to follow this girl who's kind of stuck in the middle of her parents' kind of struggles that they have with their own parents in being in a mixed faith household, and how her parents have to deal with their own parents. Basically, I don't remember which is which. It's been a little bit since I've seen it, but her parents, one of them is a Christian and one of them is a Jew, and they've had their own stuff and problems with their parents, but basically, like, kind of stuff happens where the parents start trying to talk and say how they need to raise her, right? This girl, Margaret. And it's, I want to say it's a Judy Blume book that was adapted into a
Doesn't Judy Blume write children's books mostly?
Mm-hmm. It's like a, well, because it's this little girl who's growing up, and it's like a.
So is this more like a maybe like a teen young adult fiction type thing?
It's like what it would be. And there's a lot of stuff interesting in it, but yeah. So it's her coming up, and
sorry, I think Judy Blume, and I'm thinking of like a really like nice children's book here. Yeah. I'm like, well, oh,
I could
really?
Also like have said the wrong one. So apologies if I said the wrong person. But the biggest thing for me, and this isn't as big as my other one that I talked about last week, as far as what I hope for the acting Oscar nominations, Rachel McAdams plays the most amazing, complex character in this, and I would die for her to get a Best Supporting Actress nom. I'm pretty sure it's not happening, but I would love it so much. Her character is so interesting and nuanced, and her relationship with her own parents and her daughter makes this movie just that by itself. Seeing Rachel McAdams' performance in Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret is worth checking out.
Okay, so it is called a middle-aged coming-of-age type book. So sorry, that's great. That's awesome. It is cool. By Judy Blume. Okay. I just was like, that's crazy. I hadn't thought of it in that way.
Yeah, so that's good. Check it out.
It is on my list.
All right. Number seven.
Number seven for Casey is The Nun Part 2.
Our first horror movie on the list.
Yeah. So for me, I love the Nun series. I love the Conjuring franchise and kind of the world they built around it. And these movies, no matter how bad they are, I feel like are so good for me because they're fun. I think they're really cool. As a person who's very interested in, like, I hate being like, I like the occult stuff, like things like that, like things that are kind of out there and the things that are unexplainable. Like the Nun series, The Nun has fascinated me since we first saw it in, The Conjuring 2, I think, is when she first really started coming in, or the first one, I can't remember. But like always a fascinating thought and kind of like how evil or, you know, the presence of energy moves. I liked it. I don't know if you guys have seen it, so sorry. This is also kind of like a little bit spoiler thing, but it kind of continues the story of the first nun a little bit, which is a good way to say it without giving too much spoilers. But it is Vera Farmiga, her sister, who plays, what's her name? Anyhow, she's in it again, the younger person. And so it's really cool. I like the follow-up to it. And is it a perfect movie? No, but...
Is it scary?
Oh, yeah. It
got you some jumps?
Yeah, got some jumps.
The heebie-jeebies?
Yeah, maybe.
More jumps than heebie-jeebies?
More jumps, but I just think it's kind of cool. It kind of follows the story, and it helps rewrite kind of one of the original kind of like comments about Frenchie kind of through the original series. So it's kind of cool. Nice.
Well, I'm just going to keep the horror train rolling really quick, if that's all right, with my number seven, if you're ready to fight, Vince, because it sucks.
Seven?
Seven. Crazy, right?
That's
I'm sorry.
Way too low.
I'm sorry. Talk to me. Here's the thing. I feel so sad.
Another one you guys did without me, by the way, because I wasn't able to see it.
I don't think we actually did an episode, but
oh, you didn't?
I don't think so. But
I don't think so.
I can't remember.
We talked about it, but
yeah. That was probably
we it. Definitely saw it, and we've talked about it. No, we did. I can't remember.
You guys we'll did have an episode. Check the tapes. Check. You guys did an episode on it, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, we did.
Talk to Me was incredible, and I feel bad that it's this low. It could just be a recency bias thing because I saw it a long time ago, and I saw other movies, and when I was trying to rank them, I was like, I think this one was better. But that I don't want that to take away. This is my highest rated horror movie that came out last year, and ended up number seven on my list, and you know how much I love horror. So who knows? Maybe I should just throw it higher just for that sake of it. But notwithstanding, Talk to Me was an incredible movie. I loved the horror aspects of it. I loved the acting. I loved the way that they went with this story. Like we said, apparently, because we forgot, we have a whole podcast episode on it, so check that one out.
I was like, I'm pretty sure you do here.
Okay, my number seven is Barbie. Nice. Yeah, it's I think pretty appropriate for me to have it at seven anyway. I don't know about you guys, but it was the most fun I've had in the theater in a long time. I laughed a lot. I was going to say if I hadn't seen Leo, it's the movie that I laughed at more than anything in a long, long time. But Leo, it just got me. But Barbie, it's like it's smart. It addresses societal norms, gender norms. It does it in a funny way. It's just a beautiful movie to look at. It's so creative. The I Am Ken song is just like sticks in your head and will just live there for forever. I really hope that it gets nominated for an Oscar.
It won the Golden Globe.
Did you see Ryan Gosling's face when they
was he surprised?
Well, because
Oh, really?
I remember, do you remember when we did our Barbie episode, I was like, the Billie Eilish song, it's going to win. And you were like, I'm just Ken. And we're like, we'll see. Pretty sure that both are going to end up being nominated.
So. And Oscars. I really hope they perform it at the Oscars too. Like it would just be a fun song to throw up on the stage. If they're going to do that kind of stuff, I think it's perfect for
My favorite meme I saw with the Ryan Gosling face was like, after he wins, it's like Ryan Gosling realizing he's going to have to perform at the Oscars.
You're like, oh no,
what have I done?
When you actually do really, it's like when you actually do a good job at your job and they want to like applaud you or like, recognition.
Give you more
like,
responsibility.
Dang it, no! But yeah, no. I feel the same way, actually. I like randomly will pull up I'm Just Ken at like the I'm Just Ken, you know, you're like going for it. When I have to like hype myself up for a meeting or something, I'm just like, I can do it. Like it's good.
It's a good song. Yeah. It's catchy. So yeah, Barbie's my number 7. Loved it. Nice. Thought it was great.
All right, Josh. Well, now because you've done your number 7, let's have you do your number 6.
My number 6 is Killers of the Flower Moon. Mm. Martin Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio. What?
I didn't put Killers on the Flower, Moon on my list.
Vince.
This changes everything. So,
I don't know where that would be, but instead of Leo the Killer and Godzilla, it would be Killers is in here somewhere. So I don't know how I didn't add that.
I was expecting it actually to be much higher on the list for you type thing.
I don't know where I would put it because I didn't consider it. I forgot to add it on the list here. So anyway, go ahead. Talk about it.
Lily Gladstone. Just this movie has so much to say, right? And it's definitely a long movie, and there's so much that goes into it. And without spoilers, let's just say that as we get to the end, there's things that are just driving you crazy and driving me crazy. And there's a scene where two of the main characters in a room talking to each other, and one of them walks out. And I cannot tell you the sigh of relief I had when that finally happened, because you'd been waiting for it the whole time, and you've been like, please, 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 please. There's just so much this movie has to say, and it's been a little while since I saw it, but it was definitely an incredible theater experience, one that I'm happy I had. Leonardo DiCaprio does great, right? He does his thing, and Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro, and all of that's great. And I'm happy if they get nominated for different stuff. I don't know if I'd consider any of them winners for a lot of the Oscar categories this year, but the movie itself is great, and I also do love the Lily Gladstone Best Actress train. I'm on board. I don't know, like, because I'll have to see who all of the nominees are to see if I'm like, yes, 100%, like, she should win. But I think, like, preliminary thoughts, I'm like, yeah, I'm on board. Let's do it. So,
what a good year for Native American representation on screen, too.
True.
Killers of the Flower Moon, the new Echo series, even though it wasn't that great, in my opinion, amazing cast. Reservation Dogs, if you guys haven't watched Reservation Dogs, it's an incredible TV show. Absolutely loved it. They wrapped up the final season this year. Pretty sure it was this year. Just Killers of the Flower Moon's amazing. Like it would have been up here in my top 5 easily if I had remembered to add it.
I feel like I need to watch it now with just you talking about it.
Yeah, check it out.
It's on Apple TV Plus now, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
It is.
So there you go.
My favorite streaming service now, guys.
Well, that's like why you're watching Foundation and
everywhere,
and Shrinking and stuff.
Everything I do, like I don't even go like search anything. I just go on Apple TV and search for what I'm looking for. If it's not Apple TV Plus, I go to the other one and it opens up for me. Boop, boop, boop.
There you go,
Casey. What's your number 6?
My number 6 is The Pope's Exorcist. So another like kind of like thriller horror film. I watched this movie actually on a flight for work, and I wasn't quite sure I'd be sold on it the first time. Like, how much will I enjoy this movie? And I was like, oh, this is good. And so I watched it on the flight home as well, because I was like, I enjoyed it. So I watched it like twice within the span of like 4 days. And so I was like, I like this, because I've like thought back on it. It's kind of the same type of thing. Like, we're talking about like what's kind of going on in the sticks in the dark places of the world. It tells the story of like some of the history. What's really fascinating about whether or not it's fully true, I didn't really look into it. It's about this. The Pope's Exorcist is based off of a true person who actually worked for multiple popes over the years and was the personal exorcist to the Pope. So that's kind of the idea. So it's kind of based off of his writings, his stories, and kind of that type of stuff that he did. And it kind of like goes into one of those things where you're like, you always wonder about like the Spanish Inquisition and all this type of stuff. At least I do. I have ADHD. I read things at 3 a.m. I could tell you all about the Great Wars of, you know, medieval Europe. It's wonderful.
In case you think about the Roman Empire.
I don't think about the Roman Empire, actually. I think the Roman Empire is boring. That's my Roman Empire.
Oh! You can roast it.
Yeah, please roast me in the comments. Tell me why I should care more about the Roman Empire, because I don't. But I am excited for Gladiator 2 to come out. So wow, there we go. But anyhow, so what I really like about it is it kind of like goes into kind of those stories that's the gray area of the history of things, right? Because if you... The world of the Vatican and kind of the things that they store and have got rid of and blurred out is so fascinating, the idea. And so how much of these stories are based on truth, reality, kind of the mystery of things. So, yeah, The Pope's Exorcist. And it has Russell Crowe in it, and I love Russell Crowe. So,
bada bing, bada boom.
That's it for me. And he's an Aussie, so I'm like,
I was like, what is that noise?
It's a crow. I'm sorry. I can't really make a crow sound.
What does that mean? So, okay. Back to me. Okay, number six. Blackberry.
Nice.
Did you watch it? You brought it up earlier, and I was just I hope you've seen it.
I haven't watched. I'm 15 minutes into it because I fell asleep last night. So I'm like really pissed because I bought it.
It's good. I loved it.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's not only is it just like a really interesting story, the story of the BlackBerry device and the people behind it and who created it and the kind of rise. I mean, it's not the point of the movie isn't the rise of Apple, but it's kind of like how Apple. I'm getting too in the weeds.
You can go in the weeds about it.
No. The reason I loved it so much is Glenn Howerton plays the main character, one of the main characters in this movie.
He's this Dennis type of actor.
From Sunny.
Yeah.
This man has a degree from like some prestigious acting school. What is the big one that everyone talks about? The dramatic
Juilliard.
This is a Juilliard graduate who has made his stamp in comedy on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He's a dramatic actor that's done comedy for years, and to see him come in here and play this role of this just like angry, over the top CEO. Pushy, powerful, power hungry man.
Like
he does
nothing more opposite.
So well. Yeah. In some ways. Dennis, in some ways, is like a serial killer and like is easy to rage like immediately. And he takes that portion of his personality or the character that he's played for the last like 2 decades and brings it to this role and just kills it. He shaved his head bald. He just like inhabits this role. So the story's interesting. Glenn Howerton kills it. You talk about like it would make you happy to see an Oscar nomination. It would never happen in the world for this role. But if he got any recognition for this role, just the very fact that he comes up in conversation whenever it comes up and they're just like, Glenn Howerton, who knew he had it in him? You know, it's just like,
yes,
give my Sunny cast some respect. These guys are amazing.
Put some respect on their names.
And it's a Canadian film that it's really interesting.
So this was actually my question to you. Did you know BlackBerry was a Canadian company?
No, I had no idea until I saw the movie.
So isn't that a fascinating thing? And that was actually something they talk about in the press stuff of this. Sorry, this is me having gone into the weeds about this film without watching it. Is they talk about the kind of like, oh, that was something we missed from the story. Like people didn't know we were a Canadian company. And like, sorry, this is having gone to Toronto a few times and kind of understanding where the kind of thing is Waterloo. Or if I say like Waterloo, I can't say it correctly, but like my friends are like literally like that is like the tech corridor of Canada. So it's kind of like our Silicon Valley. Yeah. And so it's very fascinating to kind of like know about that kind of detail and hear that kind of like what's happening. Oh, you said these were the best developers in all of Canada, like not the whole world, but what we have in Canada. So sorry, that's a spoiler.
It's so interesting though that they go and like the story of BlackBerry, they go and they poach these other. Yeah, it was just good. It was just
I'm excited to finish it.
Yeah, check it out.
I'm way excited.
Number 5. So we're in the top half of our list, the most banger of banger movies this year, and I'm super excited to just mention my number 5 movie, which is Poor Things. Yorgos Lanthimos, Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, crazy skyboxes, incredible cinematography, this journey that you get to go on with This journey that we get to go on with Bella Baxter, which is the name of Emma Stone's character, and her journey of self-discovery and of learning and being absolutely hilarious with Mark Ruffalo and with Emma Stone and just everything that happens in this movie. It's definitely a weird one. It's Yorgos Lanthimos, right, who did The Lobster, who did The Favorite. So these kind of really abstract movies. Like, definitely know that going into it if you go to watch it. But a lot of really interesting themes explored, a lot of really cool character development, a lot of really interesting things to say. So, Poor Things is my number five. And you guys, cool. I mean, like, there's no way. There's a movie with Yorgos Lanthimos and Emma Stone coming out. Like, there's no way it wasn't going to be in my top 10 list. You guys could have guessed that before the movie ever
you
came out.
You love Yorgos Lanthimos.
I love that weird shit, dude. Yeah. Like,
I always wondered what it would be like to trip acid and watch one of his films.
I think I would die.
Sorry, I always bring in like the drugs into our stuff. I'm like, I wonder what it'd be like to do this. And you guys like
bring them here.
What do you think?
Top
that,
five with him?
What do you think's in that cup?
Yeah, actually, guys, this was a liquid LSD. That's a lot. I would be dead though.
So that was my number five.
Nice.
Pushing to Casey.
Mine is less exciting than yours. Like yours has heart to it. Like is what I'm saying. Like you like picked a film that has like real large thematic elements and like something that is impactful. And I'm like, Dungeons and Dragons.
This is the beauty of the top 10 list, Casey. It's because I love that.
Yeah.
I love that both of those are right there.
But that's the thing, though, that I agree with you. It like makes it fun. But Dungeons and Dragons for me was a fun one. I'm always like really skeptical on. I think I've said this already in this thing, like things that bring in nostalgia or like things I know from growing up and things that are kind of like, cool, this is a huge following and a big thing. Like your brother is really big into D&D, right? Yep. And I've had some fun with it. Like I've not really done a ton with it, but I've went and just had fun with friends doing it. Like never really gotten into the whole soul of it. So I think it's fun. I think it's enjoyable, but I knew like, cool, am I going to be the only person in the world who likes this movie? And it turns out, no, a lot of people enjoyed it. What I liked about it was, I like the whole cast of this movie. So bringing in Fast X fame, I forget her name all of a sudden. She plays Dom's girlfriend. I'm blanking the whole entire time.
Yeah, Letty.
Letty.
Why don't I remember?
Yeah, I'm blanking. Melissa Rodriguez? Is that her name?
We'll have to find out.
Yeah, we'll find
I'll
out.
I'll look it up if you want.
Anyhow, but like, I really liked that. Like her character, I liked Chris Pine. I just liked the entire cast and crew that was kind of like a real motley crew of folks, right? It was just kind of like misfits here and there.
Michelle Rodriguez.
Thank you. But I was like, I really liked it. I liked the story. I liked Hugh Grant kind of as playing a bad guy in it, kind of like his kind of character where he brings in his seriousness, but also his like kind of like comedic timing and sense, you know, the president from Love Actually, if you don't know. But like so much of it was good. But I also like the heart of the movie in the way that it was kind of like one, like you are the great sorcerer, two, for that kid who's the sorcerer, two. I like the thought of like the return back to the things that matter most to you. It doesn't have to be family. It doesn't have to be specifically, but like in this movie, it's like, get to the things that matter most, do the things to get it. Even if you're not the greatest person in the world or you do shady deeds, there are things that are important to you that matter above all other things. And so I kind of like that. I keep doing this right now. Like I'm doing like hand art. But then my final thing is I just thought it was a fun time. And that for me was the most important part of the movie was, is it a fun adventure? Also watched it on a plane for work. So I watched it, you know, all these adverts, like you should be watching a film on a big screen. And I'm like, I'm on a plane. So it's like, I had a lot of fun with it, but I did watch it at home later on HBO. So it was a good time.
Here's the thing that I'm almost most excited for now that Vince convinced me to get a Quest. Now I can watch an IMAX movie whenever I want.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I actually saw yours coming in and you posted about yours the other day and I'm like, do I need to get one too?
I don't think I can get through a whole movie with that thing on my face. I play for about 30 minutes. Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it was okay.
I don't know. Something about the big screen just makes it okay. Like,
could you just lay in bed and watch a movie?
Yeah, that's what I did.
On IMAX?
Yeah, because like you just are looking up.
Yeah.
And so you can just have the screen.
How did you not fall asleep though?
Because I'm watching a movie.
Okay, fair.
I get about 30 minutes with that thing on my face, and I'm just like, I got to take this off. It's giving me a headache. Maybe I'll try it.
But Dungeons & Dragons was my number five.
Okay. So this is a movie that should be seen on an airplane as well. Oppenheimer.
Oh, gosh. It's going to be on there, by the way. I think it's on Delta now. So when I go on my next trip for work, I will watch it.
Yeah. Oppenheimer's on number five. Don't watch this one on a freaking airplane, man. Watch this one in the theaters. I think it did just get re-released in theaters again. If it's still in there, I don't know if it is anymore. You should watch this one on IMAX on a big screen. It's an experience just like Dune was a couple years ago. We've talked about this a bunch of times. It hits you in the face with the sound design, the cinematography. Everything is just like, it's a cinematic freaking movie. Like, check that one out. It's interesting. It's got history. Christopher Nolan's going to get his directorial Oscar.
A lot of people are saying it. He's been winning pretty much everything. So,
yeah, so.
Cillian Murphy's in it as well.
Check that one out in the theater if you get some time. Like,
what if I own a projector? Can I watch it on projector and get the same feel?
You need that good sound system, too. Man. Like, there's a moment in that movie where the sound just smacks you in the face. Multiple and it's just moments. Wow.
So I should also go rent the fancy seats that move and vibrate with the thing as well. Oh, yeah.
That'll be perfect.
I don't know. I've never tried that. But
those are fun. Have you not tried those
I've
before?
I've never done it.
So I forget what they're called in the theater, but they like...
D-Max, I think. I can't remember either.
Okay, yeah, done. Yeah,
Oppenheimer's my number five.
Josh, what's your number four?
My number four is a movie that I've seen forever ago, and so apologize if I struggle to remember a lot of stuff, but you guys will probably also hear a decent amount about it as award season comes around. The A24 Love starts here. Talk to Me is A24, but... So I was going to say the A24 Love starts now, but we've already hit one at least in my list. That was A24, Past Lives. Mm-hmm. Past Lives is the most beautiful, weird reflection about love and relationships and how things could have ended and Inyan and just so much stuff about this movie that's incredible. Again, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but it was one of the movies that I watched. I posted on the podcast account about when I went to go see like a triple header day of movies. Mm-hmm. I went and I saw No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence, Past Lives, and Asteroid City all on the same day. And this was the movie that like definitely hit me the hardest. And it's one of those that just leaves you feeling kind of like melancholic and reflective about life afterwards. And it's a good one, like definitely one that's worth checking out, and you'll probably hear it in a lot of different stuff. A lot of people are upset because they feel like the acting in it was really good, and the actors have kind of been, like Greta Lee and stuff have kind of been, not snubbed, but because there's so many good performances, and it's just kind of been looked over, and a lot of people are thinking it deserves more love. And then like film Twitter, which is just a crazy place, but like film Twitter, there's like a whole thing that this is like the movie that, because last year it was Everything Everywhere All at Once, right, where it was like released earlier in the year, and this one was released in like March or April, I think, as well. And so people loved it and they've been talking about it, but now that it's been out for so long, like the hate for it is making its rounds on Twitter now, where people are like, it's not actually as good as you think, like everyone's talking about it and it's actually terrible, like it's happening. So I still love it. It's my number four movie of the year.
I love that. I'll have to go look at it. My number four is Good Grief with Dan Levy.
Nice. I thought that was a... Is that not this year?
Yeah. I think it's... Let me double
check. I thought it was 2024.
Hold on. You might
Did
be
you
right.
guys know that Dan Levy was offered the role
of
Alan in Barbie and turned it down?
It is 2023. Or had...
Oh, nice. There you go. It was probably released at like a festival or something.
I'm actually really glad he didn't. I just want to highlight
I think he had
that.
Conflicting schedules. I think he was doing something else.
Probably shooting
something. And he's really... I saw a thing on Instagram that like he regrets it. He wishes he was there for it.
I think he would have been great in it, but I think that Michael Cera is the greatest Alan there ever was.
I think so too. Like, and I love Dan Levy, but
yeah, we love Canadians because they're both Canadians.
What's Good Grief though? I don't know that one.
Oh, so Good Grief is a very fascinating film. It talks about death of a loved one, specifically your partner or husband or wife, and talks about kind of the after effects of it, kind of joy, sadness, anger, kind of like the discovery of things about your significant other once post-death and kind of the processing of all of that, which I think is a beautiful thing. I was expecting it to be harder for me to watch. Like, I'm a sucker for a good movie that makes me cry. Like, I love a good cry once in a while. And I know a lot of people are just like, oh, don't say that out loud. Like, it's embarrassing. But I'm like, no, you gotta have like a really good emotional thing. But this movie didn't bring me to tears the way I thought it would. It made me think about grief. It made me think about like what's happened. And like, so I'm not trying to bring this into like a weird or a dark place or anything like that, but my brother died. And I remember like after my brother died, like feeling all of these emotions, and I still feel them all the time, where it's kind of like, that sucks. I'm pissed about this. There are things I feel. I wish things were different. My brother had no secrets, luckily, because my brother is severely autistic, but he was my brother right next to me in age. And so, like, we're very close. But, like, in this movie, he discovers things about his husband that happens. And so it is first off, is an LGBTQ film, just for everyone to be aware of. It's a wonderful film. And I don't think that it should be looked at any less as if it was like a straight hetero performing film either. It's really good. There's nothing in it that you'd be like, it's just kind of like, wow, these are human emotions. And if you can't see past the humanity and the beauty of it, like, just don't watch it and don't complain about it. Like, that's all I have to say, because it was so good and it was, like, very thought-provoking for me. And it's on Netflix, released on Netflix, so definitely check it out.
All right, yeah. All right, mine will make you feel some feelings, but not anything about grief, because it kind of, like, I don't know if I want to introduce it like that.
I was so excited to see where that was going.
Nothing about grief, but...
It's like, this kind of, like, just, like, revels in death and promotes it. John Wick Chapter 4.
I'm really sad I didn't put John Wick on my list, by the way.
You're as bad as me with Killers.
Yeah. But keep going.
You can still swap out your top three.
John Wick Chapter 4 is a work of stunt choreographical genius, however you want to say that.
Still asking for the Oscar category for stunts.
Some of the best action ever put into movies. Some of my favorite action stars are in this. Keanu Reeves just killing it in the role as John Wick. Freaking Donnie Yen is just incredible in this movie. Keanu Reeves is incredible. Just the choreography and the creativity in this action movie for a 3-hour long movie is just like above and beyond. And they still have ideas for more. Like, these guys together. And the director, they just announced that he has complete creative control of the franchise from here on out. Apparently the TV show wasn't great, is kind of what I heard, The Continental. They just kind of like, he's doing another franchise here in a little bit. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. And he gets complete creative control of this and the John Wick universe going forward. So... John Wick's incredible.
Like, makes me want to go club it in Berlin or something.
Yeah.
Also, I want to fight like men in a fat suit.
That scene was crazy because so like half the time people were like, what's going on? The other half the time people were just like,
doesn't matter.
Whatever.
I think what I love so
this
much
is normal here at this place.
Yeah. What I love so much about
it's not a party unless someone gets kicked off of a stairwell.
Like, well, they have the red circle in the first film, which is like my favorite scene from any of the John Wick films, by the way. Like, it's just an amazing film, like where they're fighting in the club and he's fighting the guy from Game of Thrones. I forget his name, or chasing him one or the other. But like this one, like, is my freaking favorite John Wick in total. Like, and the reason is, and it's hard to beat up Parabellum, and it's hard to beat up the first one because it's just so good. I think all of them are good. But, like, I just felt like this, like, gave me the feeling of Wild West meets so many other things, and it was just good. So I'm sad it's not on my list, but I just had to add into that.
Yeah, heck
good,
yeah.
Good call, Vince.
My numero tres, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Nice.
Three. It's my two. I'll just throw that out here. We can do this together. We can just talk about it. Otherwise, yeah, we'll just, like, repeat.
Yeah, no worries. Is it on your list, Casey?
No.
Okay, no worries. Spider-Man?
I did see it.
Okay.
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. My three Vinces, too. Just the follow-up to Into the Spider-Verse, and so many people were worried if it would be able to live up to the hype, the animation, and everything of that first one. And we did a whole entire episode on it, so you can get our really in-depth comments there where we talk about it with us three and my brother. Mm-hmm. But... basically, this movie, there's just so much good about it to not have it be one of your favorites. I want to rewatch it. It's on Netflix. I need to. The animation is incredible. The voice acting is incredible. Jake Johnson is our Lord and Savior. Just so many things about this movie good. That we love. And I think almost a shoo-in to get another win in the animated category for the Oscar.
You think?
What are people saying?
I thought Boy and the Heron. It's the love, like the... culmination of the Miyazaki's work, and it's beautiful, and it's da 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 da, and it's prestigious, you know, like it's. See, I think it's going to be considered.
Other people roll their eyes at, you know, me and us when we talk about a lot of like the best picture, like, oh, this movie, it was so subtle and brilliant, all this stuff, and they're just like, whatever. That's like us, I guess, with it like Boy in the Heron, where we're like Spider-Verse.
But yeah, I don't have much to add on top of that, but it's just a beautiful movie. I love that this franchise kind of transformed animation, modern animation. We were stuck in this rut of just this Pixar-style animation thing, and then Spider-Verse comes along and just blows everybody out of the water of what they can do, and then and then Across the sequel comes out and just one-ups what they did in the first one. It's just incredible. And the story's good and the characters are amazing. Even the side characters in it. I just remember loving Miles's mom in it, you know?
I think about the animation. One of my favorite things that we talked about was like the different worlds and the animation of the different worlds. And for me, like the watercolor of the Gwen Stacy's world.
Spider-Gwen's so pretty.
And the thing is, like, we can't because we just keep on talking about it. But there's so many of those moments where we remember, it'll be like, oh, remember this about it. Remember this. Mm-hmm. So many details, so many cool things, so much cool animation alongside an incredible and beautiful story that the end is yet to be told. We might get it in 2034.
That does the cliffhanger right. You know, like Fast X does a cliffhanger, but it's just like, roll your eyes at it. Like, really? This is where we're going to end this thing? Obviously, everyone's going to be okay. You know, kind of a thing. The Spider-Verse cliffhanger is done so well, and it gets you so hyped for that finale.
Can I hear a comment on kind of the idea of the animation and story, right? I don't remember this film as well as I would like to, and that's really truthfully, I think, as was the time when I was just super tired, dad mode, right, just surviving, and I watched it, and I was like, this is a good movie, I enjoyed it, and I didn't finish it, I think, the first time, and then I watched it again later. But what I love about animation, and if you think about this, like, this is how I feel about kind of the animation industry and, like, films that are not realistic. So, right, like, we have the Disney era, like, kind of, like, the big arts and done, and then somehow we stepped into, like, the Pixar realm where everything suddenly had to be, like, 3D and kind of, like, big in that way, right? And now they're kind of, like, weaving it back into the new iteration in my mind of where it's a mix of things and can go and, like, it's reestablishing and changing. So I think it's really cool to kind of see how people are really just, like, there are no rules. We're going to make everything, anything, everywhere all at once. Sorry, I messed that line up. But
I mean, you said there are no rules. So that's the only place my mind could go anyways.
Yeah, world, I was like, there are no rules.
In a world of multiverse movies, how did the Spider-Man one do it best?
Yeah.
Well, I guess everywhere else.
That's a debatable one, I guess. Well, it depends on who you ask.
I think in superhero movies, like established superhero criteria movies, everything everywhere all at once is its own like weird warp mind cluster. Yeah, no, good movie.
Yeah, Spider-Verse. You were talking earlier about how disappointed we've been with superhero movies, and this one is kind of the one that supersedes that norm.
I could go with my number three going off of that then, because if we're going to stick with the superhero genre, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is my number three. I love Guardians. I love the Guardians. That's my favorite Chris Pratt role. He easily made Star Wars one of my favorite Marvel characters. Just what they
Star
did
Lord.
Him. Yeah, what did I say?
You said Star Wars. I was like a whole
Star
entire
Wars
different
is Vince's
piece.
Favorite MCU character. Yeah. That's how much he loves it.
Whoops. No, but Star Lord is freaking awesome. Like him and Rocket are two of my favorite characters. Their dynamic together is so good. That's my one nitpick of the movie is something that they can't change because it's so important to the story that Star-Lord is trying to save his best friend. I would have loved more of their interactions, but I can go watch one and two again, you know? It's got a good message. In a year of bad superhero movies, this one just makes it such a breath of fresh air. It's so creative. I loved Guardians. I love the Guardians movies. And it looks amazing. Beautiful. Like, also in a year of, like, subpar CGI, it looks really, really good. Like, Rocket and all of the animals in that, like, look fantastic in it. So
I'm really frustrated with myself. So I forgot to put on my list.
Another one.
Yeah, what's wrong with me?
This is why you guys got to use Letterboxd.
I literally
use the lists.
I'm putting on my daily goals. Like, for real, like, it's going to be that, like, did you watch a movie today? Yes, do this then. But no, can I leapfrog on with you really quickly? Mm-hmm. I freaking love Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. It's one I've thought about multiple times, especially, like, being the tender soul that I am. I love the story of, like, Little Rocket and his friends within the cage, like, that. Oh, I think about it, and I don't know if you guys ever do this. You're laying in bed at night, scrolling through reels, or, you know, sitting on your couch, whatever, and it does, like, this thing. You're like, oh, it's perfect. I do that with those stories because I thought they were all so beautiful. And I think it was a good closing to the chapter of the James Gunn kind of thing with Marvel because, right, he's over DC now. But anyhow, so, like, I agree with you. It's a good place. I wish I had put it on my list, and it may have even made it this high on the list because it was so good. So my number three is actually Barbie. I put that a little bit higher on my list because I really loved Barbie. I thought what they did with it, like, I could regurgitate everything you said, was just more original. I expected much more of a soulless take on plastic, and I was given beauty and heart and emotion and awareness, which is really good, I think, in the terminology and the timeline of today, where so much of life is just copy paste and change just a little bit in so many things, right? I saw this thing this morning that I thought was really good, and it made me think about Barbie a lot, because like so many films, you know, they just end up this way. You find something that really works and then you just copy paste it, which is why Marvel's been very successful, right? You just kind of like keep building it, and now we're exhausted of those things in the way of that they're all kind of experiencing sameness. Barbie was kind of one of those things that really kept me free of thought during the thing. And the reason I say free of thought is my thoughts were able to see the point of it. I wasn't just like, oh, you know, like, this is amazing, this is good. I felt heart, I felt emotion. I empathized with all those characters. Like, what are the expectations? Maybe I don't want to be this anymore was the biggest line ever, right? Like, you hear so much about the opportunity to reinvent yourself, to change. And this actually shows you the pain and the struggle and the reality of what it is to change. It also shows you the expectations of things. And I really liked Matilda's mom being in the movie, how she plays the creator of Barbie. I forget what that actor's name is, but she did wonderful of kind of like being like, I designed Barbie to be this, not to be what everyone else expects of it. And so that's why Barbie is my number three.
All right, number two, we got Vince's was Across the Spider-Verse, which we talked about. So I'll go ahead and I'll hit it up. It should be no surprise to anyone that Oppenheimer was one of my favorite movies in the year. You know, I'm a Christopher Nolan stan, and Oppenheimer was just incredible. Like we talked about when we were recommending it to Casey, an incredible theater experience. That IMAX level of insanity. This is a movie that IMAX really just takes to another level. It's a movie that, like we talked about, just so many things about this are made better by IMAX, and it like makes me sad and makes me want to go watch it again when it's in the theaters now, because I can watch it when it comes out on Peacock at home, but it's just not going to be the same. That experience and those moments, there are some moments from this movie that just were the best of cinema this year for me, which is why this movie ends up being so high. So many movies, obviously, you know, spoilers, they blow up a bomb. That scene was absolutely incredible with its sound design and with everything that had led up to it and what it meant. The auditorium scene, just absolutely haunting and amazing and scary and thoughtful. And then the very end, the thing that leaves you thinking, and to not spoil, just the thing that leaves you thinking, and to have it be really topical. And just talking about the whole modern day Prometheus thing and why all of the story was so important. Because people talk about the last hour of it being drawn out. And the first time I watched it, I agreed. But then after kind of thinking about it and thinking about the ramifications of what it all meant, it made a lot more sense to me. And I love this movie. I love Cillian Murphy. And he's probably going to win Best Actor. Robert Downey Jr. I don't know who's going to win all of them, but Cillian Murphy is definitely a front runner for that, and Robert Downey Jr. is definitely a front runner for Best Supporting Actor as well for his role, and he also did absolutely incredible. So, Oppenheimer, I'll just leave it at that. You guys know I could talk about this forever, but Oppenheimer is my number two. Casey, before we get into our favorite movies of the year, you're number two.
Tetris.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I heard back from my parents that you were talking about this movie.
You're the first person I know who's seen it, so tell me more.
Really? All right, so Tetris. I've watched it exactly three times this year. Once on a plane for work. On my laptop, so the screen was a little bit bigger. But the first time I watched it, like, what I really like about it is kind of the history and the idea of, one, I love Soviet era type crap. Like, I think it's such a fascinating thing, like the Iron Curtain thing, technology moving there and abouts. But it kind of talks about the history of the game and kind of how also crooked business can be in a way. Like, so I'm going to give you a few spoilers for it. Nothing too crazy, though. Like, you can watch the movie. It's on Apple TV Plus if you want to watch it. It's wonderful. I think the lead in it, Taron Egerton, is that how you say his name? Rocks a mustache to the max. Yeah. But also is an amazing, like, if you know his actual voice, then you hear his voice in this movie. Whoa, like he does a great accent for an American. Okay. What's really cool is it takes place between the United States, Japan, and the Soviet Union, like in Moscow is kind of the three major locations. And so you kind of get to see different spaces and specs of the whole process. But what I liked about it was the thought of kind of like it's near the Gorbachev area of the end of the Soviet Union, which is when he did this thing called, I'm going to butcher it, Perestroika, I believe what it's called, which means openness. And kind of like the idea was that the Soviet Union could get more, become more of an open capitalistic type society while retaining its value. Mm-hmm. And Perestroika, I'm going to butcher it. Anyhow, you should just stamp the correct word on top of it. I'll send it to you. But like, so it has Mikhail Gorbachev in it. It talks about like big businesses and how they wanted to treat the Soviet Union like it was some weird child where, oh, we're trading you, we're giving you things, we're not actually giving you money, was part of like a big, big thing of it, which proves like the joke that people thought the Soviet Union was, which is very interesting. But it talks about also the plight and the struggle of Russian people, especially people in the technology sector, which was very fascinating. So super good. But I also love it that it brings in Nintendo, which is one of the most nostalgic things of my childhood. Like, I did not have a Nintendo growing up, but my cousin did. And so we'd go down to his house, and it was in the upstairs of their house. They had like this little, you know, black box TV, and we could turn on the Nintendo, leave it on for 5 days while building our SimCity or playing Donkey Kong. And so, but it's the Game Boy, which is specifically the one product I had a hard time using as a child because it's mostly for two hands. Mm-hmm. And me with my foot, it was just really complicated to kind of get the thing down, whereas like a Game Boy controller is a little bit wider. And Super Nintendo controller is a little bit wider and easy to play. And so, but like what I loved about it was it kind of talked about like the rise of the Game Boy, the changing of technology and how like games influence people, what it brings into so much. So wonderful, wonderful movie. I didn't give you too many spoilers, I hope. This was another thing I want to talk about when I rewatched it last night to make sure that this is where I wanted to put it. There is a car chase scene in it, and it reminded me of Baby Driver. Oh. So it was fun. It was enjoyable. So just know, like, it's not what you'd expect from a film, but it's really good. It's not, I'm not, like, I'm saying this is a favorite for me. It's not the greatest film in the world. So other people are probably going to think it's garbage. But I loved it. I thought it was a fun movie. I've watched it 3 times now. And for me to say I've went back and watched the movie 3 times, it literally is up there on the shelf with, like, Shrek and Battle Angel Alita and, like, those movies I continuously watch. Yes, I said I watch Shrek a lot. But what? It's one of those things.
Surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
That sounds good. I wanted to see it. I wanted to see Tetris.
So yeah. We're going to have to start mentioning that one, too, because we know Shrek and Alita.
And Mad Men.
We're going to have to start Mad Men.
Tetris will be
Love
on there.
Actually.
Love Actually. Do you guys want one more that I watch all the time?
Of course.
About Time, which is by the same guy who created Love Actually.
About Time?
Yeah, look it up. That is. It's very sappy.
I was thinking about In Time. That's not the right one, though.
Oh, actually, I rewatched that recently. That's still good, right? Still holds up.
Justin Timberlake, man, is he
JT in his acting era?
So, Vince, tell the world what my number one is.
Oh, sorry.
The Iron Claw.
The Iron Claw. We just, if you're watching this now, the video, or our podcast before this one released is The Iron Claw, and it's, I don't know how long it's going to end up being, but minus 10 minutes off of the total time, and that's how much I'm talking during that one. Yeah. Thank you to Vince for...
Vince? That's a new name for you, Vince!
Vince for letting me just kind of splurge and go into huge details about why The Iron Claw was the best movie of the year, in my opinion, and why Zac Efron deserves an Oscar nomination, and in my opinion, the Oscar win, even though it won't happen, as best actor. Jeremy Allen White is incredible, and he makes me explore my bisexual side just a tiny little bit. just a tiny little bit. That and The Bear, just there's too much good. Jeremy Allen White last year, so many good stories, so much about, like we talked last week already, about the idea of masculinity, toxic masculinity, love and family, just so many incredible things. Wrestling, Rush, John Denver, too much stuff that's good about this movie that, again, I talked about a lot last week, so I'll just leave it at that, but I love, and I watched it again as well. You talked about watching Tetris 3 times. I watched it on January 1st. I didn't watch it 3 times. I watched it January 1st, and I loved it. And I was like, this is going to be my best movie of the year. I'm like, it is. And then, you know, it's gotten good reviews, but it's not like people aren't saying it's the best movie of the year. And I'm like, am I crazy? Like, I love this movie so much. So I went back and I watched it again. And I was like, nope, it is. I love this movie so much. It was the best movie I watched all year, and I'm so happy. Like, you guys know I love A24, but I don't, like, I'm not just going to say, like, I have to have, like, A24 movie be my favorite. Like, that's not going to be a thing. I was ready for Oppenheimer to be my number one movie, and then I watched The Iron Claw, and I loved it so much.
I'm like really surprised, but also really happy, to be honest with you. I know how much you love, oh God, I just blanked on his name all of a sudden. The director who you just talked about and Cillian Murphy.
Oh, Christopher Nolan.
But like Christopher Nolan's films are amazing and they're epic and they're beautiful. But like this is like for me like a wild card, not knowing your conversation from last week, because I would have totally expected it to be
I wasn't ready Oppenheimer. For it, dude. I was not ready for this movie to be as good as it was. It was one of those, I think I tweeted the other day. I you can still call it that. I X'd.
You X'd it out.
I X'd it out, posted it on X. I tweeted the other day about how my favorite movie experiences, because this is also what happened with my favorite movie of 2022, Everything Ever All at Once, right? I just heard some good things about this movie, heard it was pretty all right. I went on a day off of work. It was New Year's Day, right? So I didn't have work. I was like, I'll catch a matinee showing of The Iron Claw. And, you know, I bawled my eyes out. And then I left, like, feeling changed. Like, those are my favorite movie experiences where you can just walk in with, you know, some decent expectations, not really knowing a ton, and just walk out feeling that, like, emotional, like, drain almost just because you felt so much during a movie.
So what you're telling me is, like, the hold on here. I have to like make sure I say this right. So what I was hoping for in Good Grief is what you experienced during Iron Claw.
Basically.
Ah, I need to go watch it then because I need a good cry lately. Okay.
It's a great movie. And do you know a lot about the
history of that family?
Yes.
Yes.
And here's the thing. I did not.
Me neither.
Vince, what's your number one film?
What's my number one, Josh?
Talk to Me is Vince's number one movie
it's
of the year.
Talk to Me. It's been number one since the moment I saw it. It would have taken a lot to knock this out of my number one category. It's scary. It's fun. It's exciting.
It's Australian.
It's Australian and mates. Not ashamed of it either. Like usually they kind of like give actors English accents to kind of appeal to the masses a little bit more. They did not compromise a thing for their movie. They were offered, the two directors, the freaking YouTube guys, offered like studio money and they were just like, no, we don't want to compromise our vision. We want this movie to be our movie. So they made it themselves using people from Australia that they knew. They put it into Sundance.
They hit a kangaroo.
Yeah.
Kangaroo Jack? Is he back?
And they go on to like, be this huge hit at Sundance and gets bought out and it gets put in theaters, released worldwide, and it's probably my favorite horror movie I think I've ever seen because it's a horror movie that like is effective and scary, but it also is fun and entertaining and it just has this awesome vibe and amazing choreography and music choices. There's one specific scene, the freaking party scene, that just
montage.
Like. It's so well choreographed to the music. It's kind of like you referenced Baby Driver earlier. They kind of do the same thing where it's just like the way that their party and stuff is set perfectly to the song, you know. And then it's got some deeper meanings, you know. Like it addresses grief and it addresses drug use and social media use, you know. And it's just it just all comes together so well. And it's creative. Like, I am not, like, in a world of so much horror, we've had so much horror. These guys come along and come up with an idea that we haven't seen before that is so unique and so effective and so, just fun. I've said it over and over again, not a lot of times is a horror movie fun as well as scary, you know? And this one was, there's moments of just, like, levity with the horror. And it's just, it was very effective for me, so... All right, so this is going to be a surprise for both of us, though. I don't think either of us know what to expect from you. Do you?
Well, I think I know what it is.
What do you think it is?
I have no idea.
Our boy Barry Keoghan?
Yes!
Emerald Fennell?
Oh, no. Are you serious?
Saltburn was my favorite movie of 2023.
Controversial takeover here. Let's hear it.
Where to begin with this movie? And I'm happy to...
Keep it spoiler-free. I haven't seen it. I need to.
So. I'm not going to spoil it for you. I just want you to think about this for a minute. What would you do for the thing you desire most? How would you play this out? Classic Loki is in it, for one thing. Then you have, from Gone Girl, I just forgot her name all of a sudden. Hold on. I'm making sure Josh doesn't see you. Suppose Rosamund Pike is in there. So this is Richard E. Grant, Rosamund Pike, and then it's Barry Keoghan, right? Like, this is a great cast already. And then the other parts of this movie, the actors, like everything is so well done. And I talked to Allie about this as we were watching it because we watched it together. And I was not expecting it to be what it is because it's a comedy horror is what they have it billed as, right? Have you seen this?
Ange and her friends watched it and described certain scenes of the movie to me, and I
the bathtub scene.
Kind of wrote that movie off immediately.
You should not write that movie off just because of the bathtub scene. I will be real honest with you. That scene is like, I would say that scene is pretty up, you know. But like the answer in all of it is like, it's nasty, gritty, beautiful, dark webs of something. And in ways it reminded me, so the filmography is set so beautifully, the costumes are wonderful, the acting, oh, it's good, good, good. But what the biggest part of this movie is to me is like, I didn't expect it to be what it was the whole entire time. Like, I'm going to throw it back to a very classic movie that was released around the same time as, I believe, Mulan or The Little Mermaid, called The Swan Princess. And they described this thing called a great animal, and it's not what it seems. And that's this movie. Guys, I sat there in so much WTF the whole entire movie. And we paused it 3 times to take care of my child. And I was still like at the edge of my seat the whole time. So like, this movie was supposed to be one kind of we watched in passing, just in the background. And I like put my computer away, put my phone away, put everything away, and was just like,
okay.
So for me, Saltburn is the movie of the year.
Just the like, very fact that it elicits so much of a reaction from people, whether it be the negative or the positive, is what piques my interest.
Yeah. And I was sitting there, and like, I'm going to read my text I sent you guys in our little chat group, because it's kind of funny. Like, and I didn't realize you guys hadn't watched Saltburn at all. I wrote, just watched Saltburn. I have no idea how I feel. And then, yeah, I do not know how I feel. I do not have thoughts other than, what the dang hell? I had a hunch, but no, I knew nothing about it going in. Def top 10. Def needs to be up there. Oh, this was me talking about later. Also, classic Loki killed it. Like, that was like my whole text thread right there. And it was like, so Saltburn.
Okay.
I love doing this podcast with you guys. There's so much variety to all of our different lists.
Yeah.
That I just, like you said, we get ideas of things that we need to watch and things we need to try. And then we just see the different personalities of like what each of us like and what we end up loving. Because I love seeing like a movie and being like, I love being able to see something and being like, I love this. I thought it was okay. Casey is going to love this movie. Or Vince is going to think this is dope and stuff. And I just love doing that. And like, what a crazy, like, favorite movie of the year for all of us. We've got Talk to Me, an Australian horror. We've got Saltburn, Emerald Fennell's next movie with Barry Keoghan, which is just the absolute craziest WTF movie. We've got The Iron Claw, a wrestling movie with Zac Efron that he deserves an Oscar nomination for. What are your movies?
For real.
And it, like you said, it'll always be growing and changing. We'll see different movies and these lists would change. But as of right now, that's what it is.
And thank you to those of you who have endured this incredibly long episode. And I hope that it wasn't an endurance thing. I hope it was enjoy and delight, because I had a lot of fun doing this. Same. Thank you for, you know, doing the podcast with me, guys. Like, it's fun. And for letting me be a part of your podcast. It's just become the craziest thing for me. Like, one thing I look forward to when we live in the middle of nowhere and we come to the city is not to go shopping at Costco like everyone thinks, but to, if we have time and can make it schedule with our schedules, sync with our schedules, to come do a podcast. My wife literally is like, am I planning on a podcast this week? And I'm like, you should just put that on every week, like, is the thing. So thank you guys, I appreciate it. Thank you, Josh and Vince, for all you guys do for the podcast and doing things and letting me just tag along in the journey. So
right back at you.
Appreciate that. Vince, any closing remarks?
Nope. This is great.
Josh,
look forward to another fun year.
You talk about you being grateful to us. Vince and I are so happy that you're here to host and take the lead on the podcast. We've talked about how we're both terrible at it because Vince was trying it out with a different podcast he was doing. I try to do it when it's just us two here, and we agree that you're the one that
it's hard.
You've got the talent for that, and we appreciate you being able to take us through the journey of all of our episodes.
It's really just vanity. But anyhow, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to the Pause, Rewind, Play podcast. We will be back again with another great episode. We're going to be talking Oscars soon, and we've kind of been talking about some plans and ideas for other episodes throughout the year. Vince agreed to go see Dune, the re-release with me, the 50-year anniversary in theaters. So we're going to go see David Lynch's Dune at some point, and we're going to have fun with that. Just kidding. Vince already has walked out the door with that. But anyhow, thank you so much again for tuning into the Pause, Rewind, Play podcast, and we'll catch you next time.